Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Nicholas Kralev, who is an author, journalist, and speaker on international affairs, diplomacy, and global travel. A former Financial Times correspondent, he has traveled around the world with four U.S. Secretaries of State, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Madeleine Albright. His latest book is America's Other Army, the U.S. Foreign Service and 21st Century Diplomacy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nicholas Kralev.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And clearly, for several months now, we've had Fox News with a consistent drumbeat about that trying to sort of make this Benghazi incident into a major foreign policy issue. It does look as if this report that came out today fairly squarely knocks down some of their suggestions, saying that the report found no evidence of undue delays in decision-making or denial of support from Washington, and saying that their actions were timely and appropriate, basically refuting the notion that Fox News said that senior-level officials had in some way refused to permit CIA operatives working out of a nearby annex to travel to the main compound to assist in repelling the attack. Do you think that this will put this to rest as a partisan political issue? It's already cost the president's choice as an ex-secretary of state for her job, or a possible job. So what's your sense, Nicholas?
I don't think it'll put to rest any attempt to politicize this even further, because it really has nothing to do with the CIA and other intelligence operatives, because I believe that's in the classified part of the report, which has not been released publicly, obviously. I think what members of Congress on the Republican side will keep harping on, actually, will be the fact that there is clearly a difference between what was said in testimony to Congress a couple of months ago to State Department officials in terms of the how prepared was the mission, the compound in Benghazi for an attack like that. Because then it was said that the mission had all measures that were consistent with what was expected, what the threat level was, what the intelligence assessment was. And clearly this report says exactly the opposite, that the security there was grossly inadequate, that many of the people who worked there were relatively inexperienced. There wasn't enough personnel. There was Libyan security personnel that was not sufficiently qualified, not enough in numbers, and in fact, when the worst happened, they just fled the scene.
Well, I think the report does bring that out. And nobody's suggesting, I think, in the report led by veteran diplomat Thomas Pickering and by the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, that they were adequately protected. But my understanding of the actual attack itself, I mean, first of all, it happened on the anniversary of 9/11, and right next door in Egypt, American diplomatic facilities were under siege from mobs. It's hard to believe that nobody could put two and two together and say, well, wait a minute, you know, this is a pretty, post-revolutionary state, Libya, with an absolute turmoil, with no central government to speak of, no central military and no coherent police forces, with militias running amok. I mean, let's face it.
Well, actually, the report specifically, and then today, both Tom Pickering and Mike Mullen are actually briefed, and they, of course, will testify on the Hill tomorrow, but they both said this report was not meant to look into who organized the attack, who was behind it, how they did it. This was a report to find out, was the State Department prepared to handle such an attack? What was done before, as you say, clearly there was an anniversary coming up. Benghazi is not exactly the safest place in Libya or in the region. Did officials in Washington and in Tripoli did all that was necessary? If people in Libya, meaning Americans in Libya, requested certain measures, were they approved or rejected by Washington? And so this was more into looking at the State Department bureaucracy to see is in spite of, we all remember the 1998 attacks in Africa on the two embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. There was a report back then. So were the lessons learned? And it turns out some of the lessons were not learned.
Again, I'm speaking with Nicholas Kraljev, who's an author, journalist, and speaker on international affairs, diplomacy, and global travel. He's a former Financial Times correspondent and has traveled around the world with four U.S. Secretaries of State, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Madeleine Albright. And his latest book is America's Other Army, the U.S. Foreign Service and 21st Century Diplomacy. Well, there have been some heads of role, though, Nicholas, haven't there? Eric Boswell, the Assistant Secretary of State for Diplomatic Security, resigned, along with Charlene Lamb, the Deputy Assistant Secretary responsible for Embassy Security, and Raymond Maxwell, the Deputy Assistant Secretary responsible for the North African region. But there, of course, in the Fox and on the right, people are still saying, you know, Hillary Clinton supposedly has a concussion. Some are suggesting that that's a convenient way for her to slip out of the spotlight and sacrifice these underlings. Do you think that's fair?
I don't have any evidence to believe that the concussion was faked. I don't know that. I suppose every journalist should have a dose of skepticism and sometimes it doesn't hurt to be sarcastic. But in this case, I haven't seen any proof that this was faked or deliberate. Let's face it, she has about a month left in office. I don't know what she could lose in terms of hiding, because I understand that she actually has agreed to testify on the Hill in January. Now, by then, you might imagine that some of the storm would have quieted down, and so the questions that she will get in January may not be as harsh as they could be this week. But in any case, I don't know how, as the Secretary of State of the United States, you fake a concussion. I don't know how you would do that.
Right.
But I think in terms of I wanted to add something to when you were introducing me. You've forgot to mention the Washington Times, where actually I was longer than at the Financial Times.
Oh, I see.
I know that it wasn't deliberate, but in any case, I did want to mention that. And I also wanted to say, looking at this.
Well,
report,
let's tell our audience, in case they don't know, that the Washington Times is no friend of the Democrats, right? It's a fairly conservative newspaper.
Editorially, yes, but I was not on the editorial
sure.
side. I was writing news, so
right.
I was covering the State Department and writing news. So there is a wall between editorial and the news department and newspapers
sure.
in this country, right?
Right, I believe so.
right, but what I wanted to say in terms of the sort of the bigger picture here, and everybody's focusing on the phrases inadequate or grossly inadequate and all that. The heads, as you said, three people have resigned from the State Department. When I look at the report and try to step back and think about the big picture of how American diplomacy is being conducted today, it's very clear to me that the United States, after 9/11, perhaps overreached, meaning it opened more missions, diplomatic missions, whether embassies or consulates or other missions. It wanted more people. It sent hundreds, if not thousands of people in some cases to some countries. And unfortunately, those people were not properly trained. They were not properly equipped. And in fact, this report says, and I'm not surprised to see that, that some of the people in Benghazi, both security and other personnel in Benghazi, were, first of all, relatively inexperienced. And second, they were there on temporary assignments of 40 days or even less. And so that, to me, that's an issue of, you want to have this very large-scale diplomacy effort around the world, and you send all these people, but you don't train them enough, you don't give them the tools they need to do their job. And by the way, most of those people who come into the Foreign Service today, they've never done anything resembling diplomacy. And so this was, having done my book and this research and studied the Foreign Service for years, I interviewed 600 members of the Foreign Service and visited 52 embassies and consulates around the world. My surprise really was that even in 2012, the State Department, the American Foreign Service, the American Diplomatic Corps, does not have any sort of proper professional development for diplomats. It's just the training is still at a very low level, and meaning not sufficient. And people are surprised when I talk about this around the country and in other countries as well, but there is no proper professional development for American diplomats.
And isn't there this tendency to just move them around so their language skills have to keep learning new languages?
Currently, the maximum number of years one can stay in one post is 3 years, which most people think it's not, too little, too short. But, there are posts that are only 2 years, and of course there are posts that are only 1 year. Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sudan, in other countries actually are 1 year posts. Mm-hmm. So, that's another issue of, yes, they move around, but the question is, do you have the best or the most effective diplomatic corps whenever the post might be? And clearly, because of the moving, because you jump from one job to another job, sometimes these jobs really have little relation, it's only because they're in the Foreign Service, but you can go from an economic officer position, for example, to a consular position, to a public diplomacy position, which really don't have much in common. And so that's why the training you would think is so important, but unfortunately, in the Foreign Service, they rely so much on improvisation, on osmosis, really, learning by osmosis and figuring things out as they go, very ad hoc. And there are many, many talented and excellent people in the Foreign Service, but the big picture and strategic vision of how American diplomacy should operate, I think everybody I actually interviewed for my book said we could do better than this.
Well, let's just in the last couple of minutes, Nicholas Kralov, just get back to this report. In the sense, my understanding is that the CIA annex that was nearby was that they were all dealing with these loose shoulder launched ground-to-air missiles that they're trying to round up, 10,000 of them on the loose, and that the ambassador himself, Ambassador Stevens, was there on a personal visit to Benghazi, which is one of the reasons why there was very little security. And the report does say, by the way, that he was not, the attackers at the compound were not aware of his presence there, and he died from smoke inhalation. It seems to me that basically this is really a personal tragedy, and the less we say about it, the better. My understanding is from this is that it's just really been blown out of all proportion. What's your final thoughts on that?
When I think about this, the Ambassador Stevens had some idea about the threat level. He had expressed certain concerns. But in spite of that, he didn't think that the level was so high, the threat level was so high, the danger was so imminent, that he actually decided to go up to Benghazi. He held a series of meetings that same day on the compound, and because they knew about the situation outside, they didn't want to have any meetings outside the compound. Not that the compound clearly was very secure, but at least that was a measure that they took. But for the life of me, why did he decide to spend the night in that compound, knowing what the security was, knowing what the situation and the threat level were? We will never know the answer to this, unfortunately, because he's not among us anymore. I think at the end of the day, this probably is a personal story, a personal tragedy, and some of those questions we'll never get answers to.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Nicholas Kralov.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Nicholas Kralov, who is an author, journalist, and speaker on international affairs, diplomacy, and global travel. He's a former Financial Times and Washington Times correspondent, and he has traveled around the world with four U.S. Secretaries of State, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Madeleine Albright. And his latest book is America's Other Army, the U.S. Foreign Service and 21st Century Diplomacy. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.